Hello and welcome to the Back in Motion podcast. I'm your host, Bernadette Gozsi, and this show is evidence-based and educates you specifically on back pain. It brings you the latest scientific research along with expert tips to live pain-free. At some point, almost everyone experiences back pain. It usually improves within a couple of weeks, but sometimes it lasts longer or keep coming back. Today, we are going to talk about back pain with a very special guest. It is an absolute honor to introduce you to Dr. Christopher Bono. He is a program director of the Harvard Combined Orthopedic Residency Program, executive vice chair of the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at Massachusetts General Hospital, and he is a professor of orthopedic surgery at Harvard Medical School, editor-in-chief of the Spine Journal. And he is here to share with us everything he knows about back pain, how to manage back pain, and some tips. Please help me welcome Dr. Christopher Bono to the Back in Motion podcast.
Wow. Thank you for that introduction. It was almost embarrassing to me. You had listed all of those different things there. It makes it sound like I might know what I'm talking about.
It took me quite a while to practice your, titles, but thank you.
You did a good job, and it's kind of interesting. You accumulate all these titles over the years, and you're like, what does it all mean? It's just different jobs that you end up having.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little about yourself? Why did you become a spine surgeon in a couple of words?
Sure. So the first decision was to become an orthopedic surgeon, and I think that was pretty much, I didn't think there was anything else in the world that I wanted to do. So when I was a kid, I loved taking things apart, putting them back together. I got my first little carpentry kit with tools and things like that. I was probably about 11 or 12 years old. So I had a little saw and screwdrivers and wood plane. And I fell in love with working with my hands. I had an aptitude for science and was a good student. So I knew I was capable of doing something in medicine. But honestly, if I didn't get into orthopedics, I'm not sure I would have stayed in medicine. I probably would have become an engineer or even built houses. So once I was in orthopedic residency, I had a decision of what to subspecialize in. And the reason I chose spine was, number one, it was dangerous and complicated. It is amongst orthopedic subspecialties, probably the most high tension, high risk type of surgery that we do. And the other reason, and really the reason that has stuck with me all these years, is I wanted to be the person who folks would maybe have seen other physicians, other surgeons. They couldn't figure out what the problem was, that I would figure out what the problem was, fix them, do the surgery, and make them better. And that's indeed what I do on a daily basis. And it's very satisfying.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. Can we say that back pain is very common everywhere in the world?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So common that you know that you've spoken to anybody and they've had back pain at one point in their life. Maybe it's chronic, maybe it's only a couple of episodes, but everyone has had back pain. But the world statistic, which I didn't know until a few years ago, is that low back pain is the number one reason for disability throughout the world. And we think about all of these health crises, diabetes and medical issues and various other medical conditions, not to undermine their impact, but it's really low back pain that probably is the most impactful on people's ability to function throughout the world.
Yes. And what spine diseases or disorders do specialists typically face? So what do you see most often?
So personally, what I am currently most interested in taking care of are disc herniations of the cervical spine, so the neck and the low back, spondylolisthesis and stenosis of both the neck and the back. Now, any of those things can result in axial pain, but mm-hmm. axial pain by itself is not what I'm interested in treating as a surgeon. As a spine physician, it is something that I'm very passionate about. But what we tend to operate on and get good outcomes for are those patients who have nerve compression and nerve mm-hmm. pain that is radiating to their arms or their legs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Radiculopathy, I think that's the one, right?
Exactly. Radiculopathy okay. is the term that we use for those who have nerve pain in the distribution. But those patients who have spinal stenosis or compression of their spinal cord or their caudic ulna in their lumbar spine, those patients have different symptoms, and it could be of spinal cord dysfunction, and it could be of neurogenic claudication. So that gets into the weeds a little bit about, you know, different kinds of nerve compression that we treat. But suffice it to say that nerve compression is the root cause of what we treat.
Yes, and caudic ulna is a red flag for me. You know, I'm a yes. back pain coach, and as soon as they say they cannot feel anything, you know, below the belt, I'm not allowed to say anything. You know, of course, a doctor has to see them, and because that's one of the big red flags of treating. If you, as an exercise therapist, or even a physical therapist, we are not allowed to treat that.
Absolutely. Anybody who you are seeing, they have a report of any type of bladder or bowel incontinence, any numbness in their perineal region or their private region,
yep.
those are patients that should be referred to the ER ASAP.
Exactly. So this is actually one of the first questions I ask, and people are usually surprised by that. I don't even know their name, but I'm asking if everything is okay below the belt, you know. And that's the red flag. I think I have to ask the question because I'm not allowed to treat anyone with that condition.
Sure.
Can you please tell us the difference between acute and chronic back pain, and what are the contributing factors to chronic back pain?
Sure. So the only difference between acute and chronic back pain is timing. So acute back pain, clearly much more common. Again, that's probably the pain that everybody in the world, every human being who walks upright, has had at one point in their life. Myself, I've had episodes of acute back pain that have been excruciating, but that gets better. So acute back pain, we would put into the category of less than 3 months, and in most of the time, it's less than a couple of weeks. Chronic back pain is anything beyond 3 to 6 months, and most patients who develop chronic back pain, they have pain kind of forever, and it's just that they've been dealing with it for years and years. Now, the root cause of that pain may be known, it may not be known. So I'd like to always make a point that back pain, chronic back pain, is a symptom. It's not a diagnosis. And that symptom may be from disc related. It can be from other structures in the spine, such as the facet joint. It could be muscular related. And sometimes it could be just non-organic, be more centralized within the brain.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. And to what extent can movement therapy be used to treat back pain originating from too much sitting?
I love this question because this is the treatment for back pain, is movement, it's exercise. And the reason I love this question is that so many patients who come to see me who have had chronic back pain have been told, oh, you shouldn't play sports. You need to really be careful. You shouldn't be doing bending. You shouldn't be doing, you know, a whole list of activities. And I sit there across from them and I say, who told you this? Oh, I saw a spine surgeon, or I saw my primary doctor. And it's really, truly misinformation. Only in a setting where you have something that compromises the structure of the spine that you would tell somebody. Otherwise, what we know is that we can induce back pain by making a patient inactive. If I told someone, all right, I want you to lay on your back for 2 weeks, they would have back pain. And if I told somebody to sit in a chair for 12 hours a day, they would have back pain. And the reason for that is the muscles become deconditioned. The muscles are no longer doing what they're intended to do, not to mention they become tight, and then there's flexibility issues. So movement is critically important for back health.
Yes, actually, I come across a lot with that. I have clients and they were told not to move.
Yeah.
Bed rest.
It's terrible. And even after surgery, I'm a very, very strong advocate, even after a fusion, that if a patient has a solid fusion, everything surgically, we've achieved the goals and they're feeling good, there is no reason that they should not be able to engage in pretty high level activities. Now, there are certain limits to that. If someone's had a 3 or 4 level fusion, they should be playing contact sports. But if they've had a 1 level fusion, 2 level fusion, and they want to do yoga, hanging yoga, bodybuilding, endurance running, you name it, they can do it. And you name it, and I have patients who have done it after surgery. So it's not just in those chronic back pain patients that they've been misinformed. It's also in the post-op setting that I see it as a surgeon.
Yes. Usually what I advise to my clients when they have, I usually treat chronic back pain patients, and work within your pain limits. Like stop if you need to stop, and don't expect rehab exercises to be pain-free, because it comes with some pain. But don't expect when we are treating back pain that it is going to be absolutely pain-free. And I usually say that if it subsides within 24 hours, we are good. But if it stays longer for 48, then we need to reduce the intensity of the exercises. So this is what I usually say.
And that's exactly the correct advice. And that's, in fact, what I tell my patients as well. And as far as that whole idea, if it hurts, it means you stop doing it. That's not the case. And that's for all movements. You know, this is not just back pain. This is knee pain. This is shoulder pain. But it's a very important distinction that if you are having increasing pain moment by moment with what you are doing, that's a time that you have to scale back. But if you have some pain, but it's steady and you're able to continue to do the activity that you're doing, whether it's running, whether it's doing some type of weight exercise, continue to do it. Because you are not injuring yourself any further. And in the end, you're actually improving yourself. You're doing yourself some good.
Yes, great. And what form of exercise do you recommend to your patients?
All right, this is a standard recommendation for me. It may not be for other spine surgeons or other spine physicians, but this is something that I've learned from some experts in physical medicine rehabilitation. It's 3 components. 1 is core strengthening, 2 is aerobic conditioning, and 3 is flexibility. You can have great aerobic fitness and not have core strength and not have flexibility, and you will have back pain. You can have great core strength and not have aerobic conditioning and flexibility and have back pain. So it really takes all 3. And even within the core strengthening, I make a strong pitch to the patients to think about the 3 planes of core strengthening. So it's not just doing sit-ups, which is just in that frontal plane. It's frontal plane, it's rotation, and then it's side to side. So, you know, my 3 standard exercises: plank, side plank, and then Russian twist.
So do what the spine can do: rotate, flex, and extend.
Exactly.
So do all of that. Right?
Exactly.
And rotate. I hope I didn't miss anything, but so I think that's the point, to do everything what a spine can do.
That's exactly right. And the question, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. So again, you're tapping into my one of my passions over here. So one of the other things that that I make a big point of is with the aerobic treatment, with the aerobic exercise. I have patients telling me, it's like, well, I don't understand. How could that help me? It's all about blood supply, and it's about what you're demanding of your core while you're doing those exercises. So when you are exercising, getting your heart rate up, you're increasing the blood supply to you, all of the muscles in your body, just in general. And it makes a huge difference. And I can tell you that for myself, because again, I've suffered from these issues just as a human being, it makes a huge difference in amongst the treatment.
And I think even it's any exercise, I think is good, of course. But I believe that when we start exercising, it reduces inflammation. So when we have usually pain, there is some inflammation, right? Or chronic pain, some sort of inflammation. And when we start exercising, there is endorphin release, right? And then that's the body's natural painkiller. And that's the best what you can probably do.
Absolutely.
Motion is lotion.
Motion and strengthening, it is the key. And I know for myself, anytime I've been injured, and when I say injured, it's not really, you know, like I had an ACL tear or a disc herniation. Anytime I have pain after a workout, I feel better.
Yep. Yeah, I hear that from my clients too. Oh, that felt so much better. I didn't want to do it, but now I feel so much better.
Exactly.
And how does lifestyle change, like incorporating regular exercise into our life, affect the chance of a possible orthopedic intervention for those who often have back pain?
It's really the key. The key is that your lifestyle has certain demands, and everyone's got a different level of intensity of activity that they do because of their job or because of their situation. So if you have someone who's got a sedentary job, they're sitting at a desk for 8 hours, that's someone who absolutely you want to make sure that they get into a gym and do a workout every day. If it's possible to take a break or two during the day just to get some stretching, that is also a lifestyle modification that can help. Now, on the flip side, if you are someone who's a heavy manual labor, I have a lot of patients who do heavy work and they have back pain. And they say, well, I'm working all day, I'm exhausted, I'm tired at the end of the day. The last thing in the world they want to do is work out. They could be very strong people, still have a weak core, and have terrible flexibility. So again, those are folks who really need to incorporate this into their lifestyle. So how often? You know, personally, I work out nearly every day, you know, maybe 6 out of 7 days. I don't expect that of every patient. I would say as far as what core strengthening, that should probably be every other day. For flexibility training, I think that's easy enough. You can probably do every other day as well. And as far as aerobic conditioning, the bar there is not very high. Maybe a vigorous walk at a minimum twice a week, just to get that heart rate up into the higher range. That's going to make a difference.
So literally, we are touching on the physical activity guidelines.
It's exactly the same thing. Yes.
And when I say physical activity guidelines to anyone I see, because first of all, when I see someone, I ask them, do you exercise? How's your physical activity? And, you know, I say, oh, here's the physical activity guidelines. And it is same for the 18-year-olds or even for a 64-year-old. And they are surprised that it is actually the same amount of cardio exercise as well as strength training, because they think that, oh, no, I should work out less. No, they actually should work out more.
Yes.
That's the truth.
Yes, yes, yes. They should absolutely work out more. And for me, when I have a patient that tells me that they exercise on a regular basis, I want to know exactly what they're doing, because it may not be hitting all components. and it may not even be adequate what they're doing. So I don't take it as at face value. I really tried to dig into it.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. I just would like to touch base on, for the listeners, what is the clinical or the physical activity guidelines. It is 2 to 3 strength training sessions per week and about 150 minutes to 300 minutes of moderate cardio exercise, like walking.
Correct.
Right? Or if you're running, it's 75 minutes to 150 minutes of running. But if I would say to one of my patients to run with back pain, they would say, oh my God, I can't. So do you see patients that, you know, they have back pain, but they run?
Oh yeah. So
really?
Yeah. In fact, I have one patient who just ran a Boston Marathon. This, I think, has to be her 7th year. She's a chronic back pain patient who had scoliosis surgery when she was a kid and then had an additional surgery with me because she developed a problem below that. And every year she checks in with me, you know, it hurts here, it hurts there, should I stop? It's like, no reason to stop, keep pushing through it. And every year she managed to finish this marathon. So even if you have pain, doesn't mean that you should not run. Now, there's a difference is if you have pain and you go out running and the pain is increasing, as I said before, to a point where you feel like I'm in tears, then there's a problem. Then that needs to be investigated. But say that because you have back pain that you can't run, no, go out, try it. And you're not going to hurt yourself. Just your body is an experiment. So run for a mile and see how it feels. Reassess and say, you know what? I feel okay. Let me do a little bit more.
I think the problem is not the running, but people go for more than they should.
Oh, yeah.
I think they overdo it. And I think I come across many chronic back pain patients, especially mothers, because I usually treat women. Mm-hmm. They try to be everything. You know, they have kids, you know, work. They work out, they do everything, and then they end up with this back pain. So I think we should have a balance, of course, right, with everything.
Yes.
And if you start running, whoever listens, and you, if you're about to go out and run, but listen to your body. And if you just started running, don't run more than a mile, right? See how your body feels a day after, within 24 hours. And then you go back and then you can do more if you feel like, but just don't overdo it, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you want to injure yourself, if you haven't run in months and months and you go out for a 5-mile run, you'll come back hurt. So it's common sense. But a lot of people, including myself, we have this feeling of all or none. If I can't do it, then I don't want to do it. But the other thing to consider is that running is just one of the aerobic exercises that we can do. I think that stationary bike, you know, helped by popularity of Peloton has really helped a lot of people get their heart rates up. Elliptical is also a great exercise. You just need to get the heart rate up for a sustained period of time.
Yes, I think they have to pick whatever they like. I don't like to say that you should do this and you should do that. I mean, I teach Pilates, but I do know that if you like to go to the gym, then go to the gym. You don't have to come and do Pilates or you don't have to do yoga. Do what you enjoy doing. I think that's one of the keys, because if you hate something, you're never going to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
And there we were touching on disc degeneration. Can we talk about disc degeneration and tissue healing times?
Sure.
Because we know that disc degeneration heals without doing anything, literally, right?
Well, I think we have to qualify some of those statements. So disc degeneration is something that does not, in fact, heal. You know?
Disc herniation. I'm sorry.
Oh,
it's my bad. Disc herniation. Sorry.
Okay.
It's my bad.
All right. Yeah. So disc herniations, yes. So disc herniations, the natural history of a disc herniation is for it to resorb over time. And 90% of patients who have symptoms of a disc herniation, which is back and leg pain, they are going to improve, avoid surgery with physical therapy, injections, and whatever else. So it's a minority of patients who are going to have persistent symptoms enough that they might choose to have an operation.
Yes, and it is 12 to 18 months, the tissue healing time for disc herniation, am I correct,
it depends on...
Because it's...
Yeah, so... Mm-hmm. So there's the inflammation. The inflammation is going to disappear or to dramatically improve in most patients within 3 months. The herniation itself may take longer, and that may be a year or a year and a half. So we know that from mm-hmm. some follow-up studies with an MRI. However, just because the disc herniation, the presence of it is still there, if the inflammation is gone, then there may be no symptoms.
Wow, great. Yes. And it's 12 to 18 months or a year or a year and a half because it's less vascularized, right? It's not like muscles.
Yes, it's less vascularized. And the body actually sees it as a foreign body. So it when the disc is inside its normal little house there, inside the annulus, it doesn't have a lot of blood supply, so that when it leaks out, the body has that reaction because it is a foreign body. It doesn't know that it's part of that person. So what happens over time is it slowly is being broken down by the body, but it's not like a muscle. It's not like a tendon. It has a different kind of healing path. So we're really asking the body to break it down little by little.
Yes, thank you. And now let's touch base on disc degeneration.
Yes, very different.
Yes, sorry, yeah.
So disc degeneration, I want your listeners to consider that it is not something that is an injury. It's not something that they have caused. And it is not something that necessarily causes pain. And the reason I say that is we absolutely know with certainty that every human being eventually will develop disc degeneration over time. The older you are, the more degeneration you have. Now, I can have a 15-year or 16-year-old patient with terrible-looking disc degeneration, who genetically is predisposed to that disc degeneration, and yes, they may have terrible back pain. I can also have a 75-year-old who doesn't have that much degeneration because genetically was just given a gift. Now, I might be seeing them for something else. So we always have exceptions to the rule, but the thing that is very important to understand is that just because you've had an MRI and you have an MRI that shows disc degeneration, that doesn't mean that it's the cause of your pain. It doesn't mean that you need an operation. And it doesn't mean that you should avoid activity. You follow everything that we've spoken about so far. But what it does mean is that if you have an MRI in another 10 years, it probably will show progressive degeneration, but that's also not something that we should feel like is a disease. We shouldn't feel like it's going to correlate to symptoms. It's just the nature of how our bodies are designed.
So is disc degeneration, is it like wrinkles on the inside?
I love that. I love wrinkles because what I call it is gray hair of the spine. So I like wrinkles better.
Okay. So disc degeneration, to the listeners, it is absolutely normal, aging because we are humans, and it is like having wrinkles on the inside.
Love it.
Perfect. Good. So can we consider physical activity or exercise as prevention?
I think we can consider physical activity prevention of back pain. And if we want to use the term low back pain disorder, then we can say, yes, it absolutely will be a preventive and is a preventive measure for low back pain. Will it prevent degeneration or other types of things? Not necessarily, as we just spoke about, that's, you know, more genetic and it's in your cards. But absolutely, those who exercise, those who are more fit, those who are more active, have less back pain than those folks who are more sedentary and are not doing those activities.
Great, thank you. Can you please give three tips to the listeners dealing with back pain?
So tip number one, throw your MRI report away. I tell patients, put it at the bottom of the drawer and don't look at it. Don't try to analyze every line of it because it's just going to drive you crazy. Number two is work through pain if it is not increasing while you're doing an activity, but please do not avoid exercise. Consider exercise stretching as the treatment for your pain. And number three is when you have pain, that's not your body telling you that it's injuring itself and that you're making yourself worse. That's one of the most common questions that I get in the office. It just means that whatever is causing the pain is still there, but it's not that, okay, I'm doing a bending exercise and I'm crushing my disc even more and I'm making it even worse. That is not the case at all. And what you'll find is if you work through these things, you should be encouraged because your pain will improve. And when your pain improves and you realize you're doing many more things and improving your function, then you have that positive reinforcement.
Yes. I see many, many times people want to go and have an MRI. They find that they have this degeneration and I mean, it's there. And I'm not sure what they are looking for.
They're looking for an explanation. A lot of what I do in the office is about deprogramming and setting expectations. So the deprogramming is, well, it's 2024. And with all the advances, there should be an explanation for my pain and a specific treatment. And the specific treatment that people are looking for is a shot, a medicine, or surgery. And they don't necessarily like to hear that it's exercise on a regular basis forever. So the downside to an MRI for pain, axial pain, is now you have all these findings and people now assume this sick role that there's something wrong with their spine structurally. So I go through their MRIs and I said, you know what? This is not bad looking at all. And nothing here should stop you from doing what you want to do. And that's an important part of that consultation.
Do you think that every doctor or health professional explains this very well to their patients?
Unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, I believe that I'm in the minority. And that's for a variety of reasons. Number one is I think that I have a very holistic approach to the spine. Whereas a lot of my spine surgeon colleagues may not. I think physiatrists may be a little bit different and different disciplines. The other thing is that many spine surgeons are not happy to see a patient unless it results in an operation that they can book. And I really take offense to that because you'll have pretty poor outcomes if you're not being selective. So the patient that comes in and has disc degeneration and back pain, 20, 25 years ago, every single one of those patients would have been told that their disc degeneration was the cause of their back pain and they should have a fusion. And that is wrong because we know that, that those fusions, by and large, don't work very well. So those are the, I don't think that the majority of folks should share my same viewpoint.
Yes, I have to agree with that because, as I said, I see my clients, they come with an MRI paper and they say, oh, my doctor told me I have this degeneration and I should stop doing this, I should stop doing that. I cannot do any aerobic training because I'm going to make it worse. And I cannot do this, I cannot do that. And they get scared and they lose their confidence in their bodies. And it's really, really hard to get it back.
It's precisely correct. And whatever you're doing to get their confidence back, keep doing it, because that you're helping those people so much.
Thank you. Well, we try. And I also wanted to touch base on influencers these days, as you probably see many influencers. And so I'm a Pilates instructor, but evidence-based. So I treat my clients on current research and the current clinical guidelines. And, you know, you are on social media and something pops up and there is this guy with 2 million followers saying that, oh, you've got back pain? Shake your body and it resolves. And he states that every advice he gives, it's on his personal experience. Can you please tell, giving advice to, you know, to your patients like that?
So that is the worst advice you can give. And since we are speaking about evidence base, as you and I both know, there's grades of evidence, and your advice based on your experience and based on your experience is the lowest level of evidence. It's completely subjective. You haven't examined it. You haven't published on it. It hasn't been peer reviewed. Who knows what the data actually is and if you're telling the truth or not. So it's meaningless. The reason that there are so many gimmicks for back pain treatment is because of folks like that who are, they come up with some exercise or device or something to make the money. There's no burden of proof. And then desperate patients are seeking for that magic cure. And, you know, you have one patient that it might have helped. They write a testimonial and then, you know, you have a whole business. So it's frustrating because it's absolutely not truthful. It is not evidence-based. And it's really, in the end, it's hurting patients because they're not getting to the path that they really should be.
Yes, and unfortunately, I see that people, they kind of believe in that these days. You know, they open up social media, it's right there, and they trust someone. So how do you know, as an expert, you can tell them, how do you know if you can trust someone or someone's advice?
I would like to say it's the sniff test of, does this smell truthful or do you smell some BS? And if the person sounds like they're trying to sell you something, if you feel like they're like a salesman, then that's probably not something that's going to be truthful and help you. But if it's someone who is telling you, here's pros, here's cons, here's my experience, here's what some studies have shown, you know, it doesn't help everybody, but I think you're the kind of, you know, these kind of folks might be helped by that. That sounds like someone who's given this some thought and they're not just trying to sell you a line of merchandise. So I think that it on the internet, whether it's YouTube or social media or whatever else is out there, you need to use some judgment. But otherwise, it's very difficult to figure out what's true or not. But I will tell you that even my own son, who's 15, I will tell him something 15 times about a spine. As a spine surgeon, as this is what I do, and then he'll watch some YouTube video and he's like, David, did you know that deadlifting is not bad for you? I'm like, of course I knew that. You know, if you use bad technique, then yes. If you use terrible technique, you could really hurt your back. And it's just that the power of these little snippets of information that they're getting from these influencers who may have no credentials.
Yes, regarding the technique, what I learned in my school, it's not so much of a technique, but the load predicts injury, right? Mm-hmm. Because if the load is too much, well, you're going to look different how you lift 50 kg than 100 kg. So the form and everything is different because the load predicts, and also the speed. You can tell if it's easy for someone or it's they're using all their power, and they, oh my God, they're gonna injure themselves.
Yes. And in fact, since
since
we're talking about social media and YouTube, my favorite part of YouTube is watching gym fails, because you're watching folks who have the worst technique and form. And fortunately, there are some people that are calling them out on it. And I hope people are learning, hey, there's a right way to do these things and there's a wrong way.
Yeah, yeah, right. Perfect. Okay, so, all right, so physical activity is key, right?
Absolutely.
Motion is lotion.
Yes, it is. I love that.
Listen to your body within your limits, right?
Yep.
Disc degeneration is like wrinkles on the inside, or you said gray hair, right? Was that gray hair?
That's right, gray hair.
Okay, perfect. Is there anything that we missed regarding back pain? I think
we covered all the important stuff, and hopefully your listeners will internalize this and understand it.
Yes, perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening to the Back in Motion podcast with your host, Bernadette Gozzi, and our very special guest, Dr. Christopher Bono. I hope you enjoyed the podcast and all the insights you learned about back pain. That's all for this episode, folks, and see you next time.